Land by the group 15. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and Robert Norris, that's me. I'm going to be your host for the next 2 hours. In case you decide you want to jump on the phone and chat, it's 427-3772. The issue I tend to focus on is civil rights and how do we get them for folks who haven't got them in our community. If you have some answers to those questions, then by all means interrupt anything that's going on and let us know, because, or at least let me know and anybody else listening, I guess that's the general us, the royal we, getting the royal shaft. So definitely give a call. 427-3772 is the phone number here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 831-427-3772. We're also streaming at freakradio.org, and the show is archived at huff santacruz.org. Usually takes a day or so to get archived. My apologies to folks who were listening last show or trying to and finding dead air from about 8:20 in the morning on Sunday morning. The show is has a longer version on Sunday mornings, usually from 9:30 to 1, but I occasionally, or in fact regularly, creep in early and show up about 8:30 to attempt to hornswoggle poor Thomas Levitt, who does the wake-up call, and he usually succumbs to my inducements and bullying and so forth and plays flashback tapes from earlier times. Thomas is also a member of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Anyway, the last Sunday we went off the air from about 8:20 through, I don't know, about noon, and we were still streaming. So in case you want to hear what you missed, I think it's archived on the stream. And as I said before, you can get the stream by going to Huff, H-U-F-F, santacruz.org, and then clicking on the name of our show, which is, for all you tongue-twister types, Bathrobespierre's Broadsides, as in Robespierre and a bathrobe, that sort of thing, Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. And you click on Bathrobespierre's Broadsides, click on the date, and you'll find the show. Also find this show and literally scores of others. I don't want to say hundreds, but probably a couple hundred anyway. So, we, of course, are looking for volunteers to help catalog all these shows and make sure people have direct access to them if they're interested in going back to look over them or listen over them. And when there's voice recognition software on the Internet that will cover that, we'll be able to actually refer you back there without even having to listen to all the shows. But you'll be able to go directly to when a particular person has an interview. You can go back to that interview. That'll be the day. We'll see about that. Anyway, the main topic I've been discussing recently has been Homies for the Homeless and their protest at City Hall, the crushing of that protest by the police action, the failure of the city to respond to their relatively elementary plea that if people are sleeping outside and there is no legal place for them to go, that they either be left alone or given a safe and legal place to go to. And it's hard to imagine a really sensible opposition to that particular argument. Instead, you hear a slew of the kind of bigoted responses and anxious responses, such as everybody in the neighborhood will come to town if we let people have basic civil rights like that. Everybody outside the neighborhood will come to town. They're going to be pooing and peeing all over. We can't afford to keep the restrooms open. They'll just vandalize them. They'll do drugs and drink. They'll party on our lawns. They'll knock on our door and ask for cups of sugar. They'll steal from us. They'll rape our children, or molest our children, was kind of one of the claims that was actually given some actual dignity, or I should say was dignified with, it was legitimized back in about 7-8 years ago when we were trying to get the sleeping ban overturned, had more political muscle behind us, and many scores, dozens of people came to city council and signed petitions, and even Emily Riley, our current mayor, did what's called a sleep fast, whereby she signed up for a one night when she would agree not to sleep at all, and she did, I think. She did the sleep fast along with many other notables, indicating that they wanted to show solidarity with the homeless. This, of course, when she wasn't in office. She hadn't decided to run for office. Once, of course, she started climbing that crooked ladder, everything changed. I'm going to begin with some discussion or some tabling, some interviews, and some just tape from outside the Bookshop Santa Cruz, as most people know, who listen to this show anyway. Bookshop Santa Cruz is a bookstore owned by supervisor and former mayor Neil Coonerty, whose son Ryan Coonerty is the heir apparent both at the bookshop and apparently on the city council, about to be mayor, currently vice mayor, who works at the Bookshop Santa Cruz and pushes special interest legislation for it, such as the parking garage paranoia law, which I talked about extensively last year and which I wrote a lot about. You can go to indybay.org, indybay.org, /Santa Cruz, if you want to read some of the stuff about this incredible law, which removes all the parking garages from the public domain completely, and says unless if you're parking a vehicle or a bike there, you can be there, but only for 15 minutes. The rest of the time, they have verboten territory. That's a Coonerty special interest law, Ryan Coonerty law, that he pushed, claiming that his employees and the employees who were employed by the city were nervous about going to the parking garages. Therefore, they would feel better if nobody were there. You know, that's a... It's a spooky idea that got a spooky majority that is now a spooky law. And you can be maybe a little comforted by the fact that groups like the Free School Santa Cruz regularly hold square dances illegally inside parking structures where they're not supposed to be. And I brazenly walk through parking structures, walk into them, socialize in them, in defiance of this absurd and abusive, unconstitutional violation of basic right of assembly. Also, it's a direct slap at the homeless, since all the majority of concerns were about homeless people sleeping or hanging out in parking garages. You know, and they lock the bathroom, so when people pee and piss, you know, they get upset. Well, I don't know what to say to that. It kind of answers itself, you know. In fact, we asked Mayor Riley to open the bathrooms for the six-day sleepout at the City Hall a couple weeks ago. Riley first responded with an email to human rights organizer Bernard Klitzner and then simply just said nothing, didn't do anything, refused to meet with the campers, although she let them make appointments, which they then tried to follow through on this Monday. And I'm going to actually play a tape as to what the outcome of that was, and it'll kind of give us some updates as well. We'll begin with that. And I also be expecting, for those who are willing to hang tough and hope it'll happen, I think it will. I talked to her. She actually called me back today. Jennifer Friedenbach, who's kind of the legal eagle up in San Francisco at the offices of the Coalition of the Homeless, is going to give us the update on what's going on in San Francisco with the new attempt by Gruesome Newsom, the oh-so-sleek mayor, who unfortunately doesn't have any significant opposition in his mayoral campaign, which will be coming up in this off-year November 2007. His cracking down on homeless people in Golden Gate Park and pushing for new ordinances which extend the forbidden hours in Golden Gate Park. I'll talk to her about that if she calls in. In the meantime, let's go back to Monday of this week when homeless people were gathering some of them, at City Hall to make a scheduled appointment with the mayor, who refused to meet with them when the actual issue was at a high point on August 13th. I think it was from Monday, August 13th, when they were all there having woken up and gotten two citations from the police and having essentially told the police in the city, we don't have a legal place to sleep, so we're staying here. And having refused to meet with them that day, she, in a very earnest manner, apparently told them, well, actually, I don't know what kind of manner she used, but they were told to make an appointment for 2 weeks down the road, which they did, a number of them, and then they came back for that appointment.
It's about 9:40 on August 27, 2007. The sun is beating down warmly here at City Hall, and I'm talking to
Damon.
And Damon, what's been happening? You're here today, I guess, to meet with the mayor.
Yes, we are, and hopefully she lifts the sleeping ban. But since they ran us off of City Hall, the cops have been following us, guys carrying our backpacks and up and down Pacific Ave, still handing out these ridiculous, stupid camping tickets, which one of our fellow protesters last night beat one because he refused to give the officers his name and ID.
And what actually happened with that? Give me this was Chris?
Chris is supposed to be back here this morning to tell his story. He went to go get coffee and said, I will be back. This was at last night, and they kept harassing him, and Chris is like, I'm not giving you my name. I'm not giving you my ID.
Where was this?
Right at the end of our block at Goodwill, where we work at, even.
Huh. And was he alone, or was he in company with other people?
I'm not sure.
So the story he told you was that how many officers came up to him?
I am not even sure about that.
You can ask him. He said, did he get a ticket or not?
He did not get the camping ticket because they refused to give him his name and went right back to sleep.
Well, I don't think they had probable cause to stop him, given the Jones decision, so good for him. Yeah. Now, you...
And for those who don't know, the Jones decision is a decision from April 2006. Mr. Jones and a number of other defendants, or plaintiffs, I should say, sued the city of Los Angeles and the Los Angeles Police Department and won at the appeal level. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court that covers nine states, ruled that the LAPD cannot enforce a law that criminalizes people in Skid Row for sleeping, sitting, or lying between the hours of around 9 in the evening to 6 in the morning. And that's been in place for the last 16 or 17 months. And it's also a ruling precedent in the Ninth Circuit area, which includes us and all these other states, the western states. Although it has to be said, it has only been implemented in San Diego and Richmond. And we are still hoping that, we are working on a lawsuit here in Santa Cruz to get it implemented here. The Jones decision, that's what we're referring to. And we are encouraging people who are homeless, if told by the police they have to get up and move, to say, where is a legal place for me to sleep? And if not, can I speak to your sergeant? And if you insist on ticketing me, I'll take a citation, which I think is illegal, and we will join a lawsuit against this, because you know it's an unconstitutional activity to give, and it's cruel and unusual punishment in the actual words of the Ninth Circuit, to do this. Now, again, full disclosure and a caveat, there's been no case taken in Santa Cruz up to the federal court. We are preparing, actually. We got 60 people who have signed up, and we're trying to get the money to pay for the court fees and the legal experts and the depositions. The attorneys have volunteered their time, hoping that if they win, they'll be paid for their time. But there's always a chance this will lose. And that, of course, is one of the reasons the local ACLU won't get near on this suit, even though the Los Angeles one did, and they thought it was fine. We have a more conservative ACLU, or more conservative in some respects. Certainly is, I have to say, not just more conservative legally, but also socially, one might even say more backward. Conserving what? You know, certainly not conserving civil liberties principles. And we'll be talking more about that later. After we discuss this, after we hear this tape, continue from Monday at City Hall, trying to meet with Mayor Riley.
Well, Jeremy, you've been out as well. Have you guys gotten any tickets or citations for sleeping?
Not here lately, no.
And we have another member of the questionable group involved. Your name, sir?
I'm Mike.
And Mike, have you been sleeping outside?
Yeah, I've been camping up 9 in the Poganips.
And are you a plaintiff to a lawsuit here in Santa Cruz that may shortly be filed against the sleeping ordinance?
Yeah, I filled out the paperwork. I've gotten I got one ticket in December for sleeping on the levee. I got one ticket in April for having a bedroll out, and I got a ticket when they came the other night at the city hall.
What's your last name?
Fegela, F-E-G-E-L-A.
And did you? You eventually left, I suppose, as everybody did after that ticketing on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I woke up. We kind of putted around here for a while, but yeah, I rolled
about
up.
Another protest here is what's your impression or what's your feeling of that? Would you be interested in? Are you willing to risk going to jail?
Yeah, sure. It's not a big deal. I mean, what I understood is if they give you two tickets within a 24-hour span, it goes to a misdemeanor, and then it's up to the officer giving the ticket if you go to jail or not.
That's actually sleeping is always an infraction according to the city code. However, repeated infractions, which though they can't be made a misdemeanor, might persuade the officer to take you to jail in order to stop you from repeating the infraction, but you couldn't be sentenced to jail in theory for the sleeping ticket. However, they could also claim it was a campsite. If it's a campsite, then, and you do it twice in 24 hours, that is a misdemeanor potentially, too. Again, do they want to charge you with a misdemeanor so they have to provide you with a jury trial and a public defender? It has never been done. There has never been a camping misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history that I'm aware of.
I haven't heard that myself either.
So we'll see what happens with that. Do you have an appointment with the mayor today?
I do not.
Do you think you'll be accompanying Damone and Jeremy in when they go in?
Yeah, I'm here for support.
Okay. Bernard Klitzner, you were here, and I guess you're also one of those troublemakers who showed up at the ACLU membership drive meeting yesterday.
Yes.
Did you join the ACLU?
No, I didn't join them, but I did go to their public meeting.
And how did you find that meeting?
How did I find it? Valerie drove me there.
Yeah, so you found it with some assistance. How did they treat you at the meeting?
Well, to really be honest with you, I didn't feel like an elite, and I felt kind of restricted, you know, and I think that the energy there is kind of stale.
Were you prevented from coming in any way?
Well, no, I guess I wasn't prevented, you know, but I didn't certainly feel welcome at first.
Was any of your numbers stopped from coming into this meeting?
Any of my numbers?
People with you. Any of the group?
Yes, there was one person in particular.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And why did they stop this person?
Because the person had signs on them.
Kill the president? What was the nature of this?
It was kind of a, you know, about sleeping ban.
And what about the sleeping ban? Was this something you were trying to talk to the ACLU about? Or?
Oh, yes. We've been trying to talk to them a long, long time about sleeping crimes.
Well, sleep is something that only everybody does it, but when homeless people do it outside, that's sort of a public disgrace and a public problem. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I don't agree with that, but
maybe the ACLU would agree.
I don't agree with it, but a lot of people seem to agree, especially the elites don't seem to care at this point.
Well, what did you learn about the ACLU and the ACLU meeting? I understand that Bettina Aptegger, the famous Communist Party member, was speaking.
She was there.
Did she denounce bad treatment of the homeless?
No,
possibly?
She didn't. In fact, when she mentioned all the different categories that the ACLU has been fighting for, the closest she came to homeless, she said poor, but not homeless.
Nope. I'm not aware of anything they've done recently for poor people in Santa Cruz, though I could have been asleep, perhaps, when
perhaps.
They did it. I can't be sure. Did any of the ACLU members stand up for the rights of that person who was trying to bring a sign into the ACLU? Was this some huge billboard sign he was trying to bring?
No, I didn't see anybody really coming to your defense, Robert.
Me?
The only people that really helped you, and I hate to say it, is the police.
Yeah, the UC police decided they didn't want to risk a false arrest by arresting me. And also, I guess they wanted to hang out and watch the event, so they stayed for another hour and eyeballed us.
And more than an hour.
More than an hour. It was almost an hour and 45 minutes, okay? They must have thought that we were going to go in, riot, against them or something, tell them how we actually felt about them, because they're full of shit.
Damone, how did the people treat you there? How did the ACLU members treat you?
They respected us because we are homeless, think that we're like scum.
How did this manifest itself? Were there critical comments, or was it more subtle?
It was more subtle. A few of them said, "What are you guys doing here? You guys have no right to be here." I followed the one gentleman that called the police trying to get us kicked out. He was being a royal ass.
Who was this? Was this Mike Rotkin you're talking about?
Yes, Mike Rotkin. Mm-hmm. I followed him, and he's like, "No, those homeless protesters cannot come in here, da 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 da." And I said, "This whole beach belongs to the public, and this is a public meeting. So, yes, I am going in, whether you like it or not."
What did Mike Rotkin say to that?
He didn't have too much to say, other than still was on the phone with the police department.
Mike and his friends in the police department, who apparently just didn't back him up on this one occasion, must have been a rather somewhat humiliating setback for the city council member and four-time mayor, but who knows. What are you expecting today from this meeting with Mayor Riley?
Hopefully that she'll lift the stupid, ridiculous camping ban so people have a right to sleep.
Well, you know, Mayor Riley will tell you that she has no power to lift it. It would have to be done by the entire city council after two different meetings, and it would have to, first meeting would be in September, and you can always talk about the matter, she'll tell you, at oral communications, or you can lobby other council members for it, and she herself would not support that because she feels that it's a national problem, and everybody would come to Santa Cruz if the sleeping ban were lifted.
Okay, this is what gets me. The mayor doesn't think that the sleeping ban's important to be lifted, but her own judge that they have dealing with the camping tickets is throwing them out of court. So they need to either get their facts straight, figure out what's going on here, or leave us alone.
Well, now, you're not suggesting that Judge Referee Kim Baskett is saying that she doesn't even require a letter from the Homeless Services Center to throw these citations out?
She does not. She said that from Marcus at the Homeless Resource Center, hands those letters out as toilet paper. Do not bring them to her court. All you got to do is show up, and she is literally throwing out the camping tickets. Because this is when me and Al ourselves went in on March 24th, to be exact, for sleeping, she said that over 3,000 of these ridiculous camping tickets were ruined in 1 month, and she's not dealing with them. She has thrown them out of court.
Well, I know she's wrong that there were 3,000. It's probably about 60 to 100, maybe 200. But certainly it seems a strange process to have the police wake people up, demand they move, and give them no safe place to go, require them to come to court, look for a ticket, or face a potential failure to appear, then go all the way out to the Homeless Service Center, get a letter that states what they already know is true, that there's no space, trek back to court, and present it to the referee to have the tickets run out. It sounds like it's a deliberate kind of obstacle course set up to, what should we say, burden homeless people.
And just to kind of an addition to that, this conversation with Damone in front of City Hall as we were waiting for Mayor Riley to show up was superseded, I guess, on Wednesday, right before the Huff meeting. We meet every Wednesday at the courthouse in the breezeway between the county building and the courthouse. Come on down, 9:30 in the morning. I showed up early at 8, and I and a volunteer went into Referee Baskett's court and sat through about an hour of her admonitions to folks and her the original people who were coming in for their arraignment sort of showed up early and did their... Actually, they showed up at the right time, but it's a little early for me. And what the referee said when I asked her directly in front of the audience of people was that, no, she would not throw out tickets without a letter from the Homeless Service Center, even though she didn't acknowledge this, although I think she knows it, there's no shelter during the summer. She made some reference also, there's shelter for 40 people, I think up until this weekend, when I'm told that they're actually, because they're going to be doing some construction at the Homeless Service Center, and a couple of the churches have dropped out, there'll be even less shelter for maybe less than 40 people. But of course, if you talk about the homeless population of the city, which is estimated at 1,500 to 2,000 people sleeping out each night, 40 people, space for 40 is always full. And so the Homeless Service Center under Ken Cole and worker Marcos Banuelos regularly give out letters that say, you know, on such and such a night, it was full. It's always full. And it's unclear to me why Basket is requiring it, but apparently Damone's analysis notwithstanding, from what I heard from referee Basket on Wednesday morning, she is asking people to come down with these letters, which should be, you know, it seems like, as I said, another obstacle for homeless people to jump through.
Yes, it is. It is a joke. They need to either find us legit shelter to where we can have our animals, our kids, and not separate us, okay, so we can actually get sleep, or lift the stupid sleeping ban. Thank you.
We've been talking with.
And hopefully the mayor will get our point and lift the stupid law that was made over 30 years ago, supposedly, here in Santa Cruz County.
You know, a little bit of decision.
Thank you, Damone. Fellow standing around, sir. What brings you to City Hall?
Oh, I'm gonna fucking try to get a resume made to get a job.
Aha. Uh-huh. Your name, sir?
Tommy.
And Tommy, are you an illegal sleeper at night? Do you sleep outside?
No. I'm trying to get a place right now.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm trying.
Did you sleep outside last night?
Yeah, I did.
And have you been hassled by the police for doing that?
No, I have not.
Have they seen you? Do they know you're sleeping outside or not?
No, they never know. I hide in the bushes.
Okay. How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been about a month.
And you heard about this protest that it was happening at City Hall?
Yeah.
How did you hear about it?
Bernard, I hear something.
Oh-ho. Bernard Klitzner causing trouble again, eh, Bernard? All right. Well, anything you want to say to the free radio folks out there?
Just have a good day, huh?
Thank you, Tommy. We have another arrival. Your name, sir?
Jason.
And Jason, why are you at City Hall today?
I'm kind of with these guys in the ending of the sleeping ban. I think it's kind of ridiculous. They don't have enough room at the shelter, and they, you know, rather than try to deal with it with a conventional method, they just seem to push the ticket factor. And it's kind of like a gavelin over these people's heads, you know. It's like you can't sleep anywhere, can't be caught with a blanket wrapped around you.
Are you sleeping outside yourself?
I myself am, yeah.
And have you heard of anybody getting tickets in the last 2 weeks, or have you?
I just received a ticket a couple days ago.
For
camping. I was sleeping up in a they call it Top of the World, and I was sleeping up there, and a park ranger came by.
John Wallace, perhaps?
I couldn't tell you his name. I don't have that ticket.
Did he give you a safe place to go?
No. He didn't offer me anything. Just told me to get my stuff and get out of there with my ticket.
What time of day was it?
It was about 8 o'clock in the morning.
And did he say that he'd gotten a complaint?
No. He took his own initiative to search the area for anyone camping.
Did he have a tent and a stove?
No, just a simple blanket. I had a blanket wrapped around me.
Did you use the famous magic words, Ranger, can you offer me a legal place to sleep?
No, I did not, actually. I probably should have.
In the future, you can say to the ranger, well, either that or take me to a magistrate. You have no probable cause to give me a citation because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that it's cruel and unusual punishment to ticket people at night when you have no shelter for them. And it's still night. You know, it's still that period of time when that would happen.
Right. Between the hours of 8 and 9. Yeah, I definitely agree to that.
It doesn't mean necessarily that they would respect that, mind you. Still might get taken to jail, held overnight, or held for a couple hours, and then released.
It's a lot better than sitting there with my, with my tongue all twisted up and tied, waiting to get handcuffed for any comment I do have, you know.
Right, right. It's best in, you know, what you think your rights should be, anyway, and what they're expected to be, and what the Ninth Circuit Court has declared them to be, at least in Los Angeles, so... Anybody else heard of any site? What's your last name?
Zurcher.
How do you spell it?
With a Z-U-R-C-H-E-R.
And have you joined the sleeping ban lawsuit as a plaintiff?
I've signed the petition, and I have been an activist in the sleeping ban movement.
Would you like to join the lawsuit itself and be a plaintiff?
Not at this time. I'm not sure at this time.
Okay. Well, it's about 10:05, and we're approaching the mayor's office. Bernard, Damone, Jeremy, Mike, and what's your name again?
Jason.
And Jason. And it's part of a protest group that were here at City Hall for 6 days and six nights. And we're approaching the mayor's outer chambers.
We have appointments with the mayor on the speaking band this morning.
So the mayor is missing
in action.
He's missed her 10 o'clock appointment. My goodness. You would think that the mayor would have more respect for homeless people.
What did she say?
The mayor is not even here yet.
Oh, my gosh.
And so why do they schedule appointments when the mayor is not here? Get your schedule straight. Moment.
Maybe she doesn't think you are perhaps
important.
Worthy enough to. Why don't we hang out in front of the
You office? Guys sleep in order to live, right? So do we.
We just heard from Martine Bernal that the mayor has called in and apparently won't be available this morning, even though she was seen walking around downtown by City Clerk Leslie Cook, presumably on her way over here. So, Damone is announced. What are you suggesting now, Damone?
We camp out on her yard until the mayor does see us.
You mean here at the City Hall?
Yep, until she sees us.
Okay, well.
They're going to get tired of seeing our faces sooner.
Report
or later.
That faithfully. Any comments from any people waiting here that, how do you feel about the mayor's not showing up?
I'm surprised she's chicken. I just don't understand. It's not a mob of people here. She, I don't know, just proves the point that homeless people are secondhand citizens. They don't want to hear her voice, and I'm a registered voter, so.
So am I.
Come election time. Come election times, and hopefully it'll become an issue. I'll push for it to become an issue.
I hear she's going to be running too.
Yeah. And your name is?
Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Do you have any comments?
Coming.
Around the fact that the mayor has scheduled appointments to be here with a number of people and is not. And also apparently hasn't informed those people either.
Well, the way the guy made it appear to me.
Martine Bernal, the assistant city manager, just came out.
Is the fact that she told them not to make an appointment when they did. I guess their mistake. And we're supposed to call her, leave a voicemail, and it should get back to us. But then again, that is her choice.
Now, wait a minute. She's saying that you guys went in and made an appointment with the clerk here at the city, I mean, one of the workers at the city city offices. Is that right, Damone?
Yes, we did with their so-called mayor's secretary, who said, yes, the mayor will be in today. Me, John, and Amanda asked her 3 times if the mayor would be in today before we made our appointment.
Okay, meaning about a week previous, you made this one?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. And they said, yes, the mayor will be here on August 27th, back from her vacation.
And indeed, she was back from her vacation yesterday because she was at the event you were at, Damone.
Yes, she was. She was at the event that we were at yesterday, Laffy Daffy, all kicking it with everybody out there that were getting the awards yesterday, but I guess us ones that helped them earn those awards aren't important.
So I'm going to go in and find out what's going on with the scheduling here, because I find this a little peculiar. Maybe somebody want to come with me? I'll find out what's going on here. Hello, how are you doing, Mimi?
Okay, how are you?
Good. So, what's the procedure for making an appointment with the mayor?
Let's do it. Appointments.
Okie doke. You got your appointment book here, right? It's a pink book.
Yeah.
With the picture of Emily Riley in it.
Our next one is Monday, September 10th at 10:15.
I'll tell you.
Okay, what's your name?
Jerry. Overton.
What's your last name?
Overton.
Can you call
it, please? William Ocean, Lincoln Victor, W-O-L, V-E-R, T-O-N. See how often they...
And what's happening here is that the homeless folks who were stood up by the mayor twice, actually, the mayor 2 weeks before, refused to talk to the homeless people that were there. that had slept the night, two of whom had gotten tickets on August 13th, but instead gave them an appointment 2 weeks later. This is the day of that appointment. You're listening to that tape. She didn't even bother to show up to cancel, and she was in the area. Like, she wasn't. There was no emergency that stopped her. There was no a family problem. She just made a sort of an executive decision to not to meet with these people. And they were told. Then they were told by the assistant city manager they had to do it by phone. I found this peculiar, so I went inside and asked if that were really the procedure. And the secretary said, no, you can make appointments by signing up with us. So a number of people signed up for appointments. But they then were told, actually the next day or two, I think it was the next day or two, that all those appointments were canceled, that there was no longer any procedure for making an appointment with the mayor through the city offices, that you would have to call her on her cell phone and have her call you back. An entirely new procedure apparently devised to deal with the situation. Now, it has to be said that there weren't 150 appointments that people made. There was, I think, five or six that were made on this issue of the sleeping ban. And the mayor probably could have resolved it by coming out to talk to people and the morning it happened, given her position. It wouldn't have been resolved in a certain sense because people wouldn't have gone away. But instead, she chose to treat homeless people, and this is really quite typical, as non-persons, to treat them as unworthy of an audience. And even worse than that, she lied to them. She made an appointment, first refused to see them, then made an appointment and broke it, then made a second appointment and broke it. I guess we can say that maybe the staff didn't understand that, since the assistant city manager seemed to have had this new procedure that he was telling people it had to be used, which is get yourself a phone so the mayor can call you back. Unless you have a telephone, you won't get an appointment with the mayor, apparently, seems to be, unless you have a friend with a phone or something. So I'm not surprised at this behavior by Mayor Riley, but I think it is abusive. I think it shows sort of the core of the mentality that Riley and other mayors before her have had around this issue, which is when people seriously come to discuss it and demand it, she is nowhere to be seen. When people are showing their real needs, she doesn't want to be within a mile and a half of City Hall, and she wasn't. She didn't show up that week. Same with the vice mayor, Ryan Coonerty. At which point now, I think we're going to turn to a little of the protest in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz that happened. Every week, every Sunday at 2 is the time that Huff and the Human Rights Organization have shown up in front of Ryan Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz. As I mentioned before, he's the vice mayor. He supports the sleeping ban. He's the only attorney on the city council. And he's now begun banning people from the bookshop, not because they're engaging in violent behavior, not because they're threatening people, not because they're crapping on his doorstep, but because they're members of a protest on an issue that he strongly disagrees with and that are holding him accountable at his place of work. You be the judge as to whether that's appropriate behavior by a vice mayor, by a person who claims to be progressive on this issue. I just don't think so. But let's listen to some of the commentary in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And I believe this was last Sunday's commentary. It might have been the Sunday before.
Archie McKay.
And Archie, you're a person who has lived in Santa Cruz, and now you're passing back through again?
Yeah, passing back through.
And you said that when you were here, there were hassles under the sleeping ban?
Yeah, there was, yeah.
Did you yourself get sleeping tickets?
I never did. I somehow managed to avoid them, but I actually had a home when I was here, a place where I could sleep. But when I first moved here, I slept on the beach a couple times, things like that.
You did?
I did.
Have you turned yourself into the police?
I have not yet turned myself into the police. I did. You know that one? I slept in somebody's boat one time, which was really funny. You know, in the war...
Trespass and violating the beach sleeping law.
I slept in the boat because there was nice cover there for a little while.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, aren't you ashamed of yourself?
I am, very much so.
Well, as long as you fly right, and there's a place for you in the military, perhaps.
Probably. I think so.
We need good men and women in Iraq.
Me too.
They got a bomb, 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 Iran, bomb, 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 you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
After all, the important thing is to keep shopping, everybody.
Yeah. Well, we were going to go buy a beer, actually.
Or drinking, as the case may be. What else can you do? You shop, you drink. But don't sleep after 11 o'clock at night.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Hey.
Lest the goblins come out.
Indeed. With guns and badges. Your name again?
Yeah.
Oh, my name again.
Oh, Archie.
Thank you, Archie.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any comments from your questionably foreign-looking associates?
This is Gary from Buenos Aires, and this is Javier
from Buenos Aires.
So you are out-of-town terrorists?
Yeah, but try to keep it quiet.
I see. You have a strange accent for a Buenos Aires.
From London.
A London-based Buenos Aires. This sounds even more suspicious. You were behind the subway bombing, were you?
No, I was in Buenos Aires in the subway bombing.
Allegedly in Buenos Aires. Have you checked this story?
Yeah, I got the email from him.
I hope he's not been sleeping in Santa Cruz. Otherwise, that's another thing to add to your rap sheet.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs to sleep right now.
That's why I came here, because I like the sign, because I think sleep is so important to the soul, man. So you need
a sleepy town where the homeless don't get to sleep.
Yeah. He had to sleep with 8 people in a room last night. Apparently, he feels the presence of other people when he sleeps.
Yeah. I like to be calm and comfortable when I'm sleeping. I don't like to be other people around me bothering me.
A solitary man.
A solitary man, indeed, yeah.
Well, thank you all, and feel free to enjoy the literature. I'm going to straighten up the signs. Talking to Bernard Klitzner. Bernard, you are you're a man who's been giving out this flyer, "Before you buy at the bookshop Santa Cruz, ask Vice Mayor Coonerty why." What's this all about?
Well, we're asking people that go in there, you know, to take a look at his homeless policies and maybe ask him a few questions about, you know, his policies and see whether he's justified or not.
And are people, I understand they're supposed to fill out their name and phone number and give it to him and say, "I'd like to purchase here, but I need to know that you're not being bigoted toward the homeless with your crazy sleeping ban that you're supporting as vice mayor." And they're all, you're supposed to give a thing to tear out and give to you. Have you been getting proper cooperation from people? Have you just been handing out little pieces of paper?
Handing out pieces. Some people take it. I would say 35% of the people that go in there take it. What they do with it, though, I don't know.
I see. Okay. Well, and you've just spoken to an employee, a very long-time employee. I saw her 30 years ago or 25 years ago here. What did she tell you?
She said that, you know, if I could just be a little out of the inside the doorway, if I could just be a little bit out of that, the customer wouldn't feel so intimidated.
I don't think you look very intimidating, Bernard. I think she wants to move you away from the store, is what I think.
No, you know what? I don't think she really did. She just wanted me to move a few feet away, you know, to give them a chance whether to reject my leaflet or not. And I told her that most people are rejecting me anyway. And I said, you know, maybe they do have a couple of seconds. They do have a couple of seconds of inconvenience, but people that are homeless, you know, and can't find a place to sleep, they have many, many hours of inconvenience. And she agreed with me.
She agreed with you, but still wanted you to move a few feet away.
She just asked me very gently, and I told her at the end, you know, when we talked, you know, I told her that I would just try to keep right on the border of the perimeter, and she was real happy with that.
Preferably on the border of the city, sir, if you don't mind. Keep moving until you get to the border.
Well, not like what you're putting it.
Yes. Before you go, one last brief thing. So just briefly at City Hall, you feel that the... You were a major participant there. You participated.
Yes, I did participate.
And started you, madam.
Yes, I did.
Your name?
Amanda.
You?
John.
Now, you guys were there for how many nights?
Six.
And you claim that the Jennifer Squires, who wrote the story in the Sunday Sentinel, accusing the protesters of poo-poo, vandalism, graffiti, sexual boo-boo, and... And I guess other things I don't quite... sleeping. Of course, illegal sleeping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, lewdness. Public lewdness.
Lewd. So you think these charges were inaccurate?
These charges were completely inaccurate. Public nudity was not tolerated. We were
trying...
That might
be a good thing downtown.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, do a topless protest with all women.
Okay.
If nothing else, it'll draw interest.
I could go topless for a while.
There you go.
Show the manticles, the man breasts.
I could wear a cod piece.
But if there was feces found in the bathroom, maybe a little bit on the floor, I don't know for sure because I didn't see it personally, but I know for sure that there was no smearing it on the walls, smearing it on toilets. It wasn't smeared anywhere because I was in shortly thereafter.
Did the protesters clean up the stuff?
And what was left on the floor, yes, indeed, was cleaned up by one of them.
More than once? So.
No, just the one time that I know of.
You said it was done. There was poop was smeared here, there, and everywhere.
Well, that's just a false statement. They shouldn't have made that statement. As well as the drug use and the alcohol use, they should never have printed anything like that. There was no proof of such, and none.
The police department and Zach Friend made those comments. Certainly, you don't believe that Zach is in error, Amanda.
I believe he is in error. I don't know who he is personally, and right now I really don't care to know him because of the fact that I don't know if he'd actually tell me his real name or not.
And actually, I think Zach Friend is the police PR man's real name, but he did not return phone calls after initially I happened to get through to him on one occasion. He hasn't responded to a Public Records Act request informally, although the police department has suggested if I pay $35, they will release their analysis of the, I think it was 16 calls for service. I've got to actually look it up. The issue, as some may know, follow the show regularly, is how has the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the paper that covers this or covers up the and smears out the certain groups in Santa Cruz on a daily basis, well, actually when they bother to notice you at all, their coverage of the City Hall sleepers, or the sleep-in at City Hall, was initially, you know, quite fair, although they didn't really get to the basic issue of the Jones decision and the city's criminality here. It's institutionalized criminalization of the homeless. It's decision that sleeping is a crime per se if you're homeless, and that somehow is justifiable. She didn't get to that point, Jennifer Squires, the Sentinel writer, but she did get it into the sleeping ban and the fact that she passed on the wording of what it was, and right on for her on that situation. However, in her story 3 days later, when the police came and ended it, maybe because of her friendly story, who knows, some suggest that was one of the reasons, she just gave a wholesale broadcast of all the police concerns, which had nothing to do with the tickets they wrote. There were only two tickets issued. Actually, there were a total of 6 citations issued at City Hall that week, and they were all for sleeping. And there were how many people sleeping at City Hall? Well, if you consider the number of people each night, there were 20 to 35 people each night. And therefore, in a total of 6 nights, you had about, 80 to 120 folks, more, sleeping there. And there were only six citations issued. You might say, well, gee, how compassionate the police are, or, you know, how little crime there actually was there, but how falsely and exaggeratedly it was smeared in the paper, and how faithfully Jennifer Squires, the Sentinel reporter, reported that smear. I know, she's got a deadline, she's busy, she'll take care of it later. And actually prompted some of the longest commentary, because you can now comment on Sentinel stories online, that I've ever seen, which is kind of interesting. And that's what Amanda and John, who were two kind of mainstays of the protest, who I think aren't around now at the moment, but Damone and Jeremy and others are still carrying on, trying to get the meetings with the mayor that were promised, organizing people, passing on information about the right to sleep, talking to people at the homeless services, and dealing with trying to pass on information about what's happening in the courts and so forth, and finding out new information. Damone was at the Huff meeting on Wednesday, yesterday, and is continuing to work on the issue, and I encourage everybody out there to keep working on the issue. I think a really unexpected incident that happened on Sunday at the American Civil Liberties Union fundraiser, and which has been extensively covered on Indy Bay but completely ignored by the Santa Cruz Sentinel and other media. Check it out if you want to go there. There are pictures, and there's some. You're about to hear some of the tape that I was able to recover from the tape recording I made when I went to the ACLU fundraiser. This, as I kind of announced on free radio on Sunday, is a fundraiser by the American Civil Liberties Union locally which apparently has grown by leaps and bounds because of 9/11 and the bogus war on terrorism and the real but bogus war on, you know, in Iraq and the shredding of the Constitution and all this stuff, which makes the Democrats, you know, gives them great fundraising power among some groups. But of course, once they get into power, they do nothing anyway. But anyway, ACLU seems to be doing a similar kind of deal, or actually always has, around local civil liberties issues. They are, with a few exceptions, very bad on local issues. And even when some of them try, like Don Zimmerman, an attorney with the ACLU, who took a stand last summer against the part of the parking garage paranoia law that I mentioned earlier, the walk into a parking garage without a car or bike, you know, get a, I don't know, how big a citation, somewhere to $100 to $200, if you add in the court costs. He was able to, he and the ACLU, and the ACLU locally under his leadership, took a position against that and were able to moderate the law somewhat, though they didn't want to use the homeless word because that might alienate people, you know. But unlike the ACLU in Southern California, which supported ending the ending the sleeping ban with the Jones decision and successfully did that in April of last year, Zimmerman has refused to come out and support that here in Santa Cruz. The ACLU has been even more militant not to do that, or determined, or it's hard to say what the proper word is, but they've been completely silent on the issue, not a word. So we went to the ACLU meeting in order to raise the issue, and there were only, I think there were six of us, three homeless people, let's see, maybe two homeless people and four housed people. I may have that figures wrong. Maybe it was three homeless people and three housed people. And we carried with us some placards that were kind of held, not held up high, but just carried under our arm, and a display device to sort of discuss with the ACLU how their organization was failing homeless people. And this was a large group, a large gathering, open to the public. It said $25 to $50 donation requested. But when I asked Jenny Heth, who is the contact person who posted her number on IndieBay.org, whether it was required, she said no, it wasn't required. When I got there, however, I was confronted by one of the members of the board of the American Civil Liberties Union, and this is, of course, a strange thing, Michael Rotkin, who, of course, is also four-time mayor of Santa Cruz, big supporter of the sleeping ban. He's been interviewed on this radio station a number of times. He's been on my show a number of times, and I give him credit for coming on. He declined to come on the show this time, and I made careful note of what he told me, and I can give you some of his excuses or his reasons, if you will, but he didn't want to come on because he said this is a private matter and not a matter of public policy, which I think is, of course, exactly wrong. I think a city council member who engages in these kinds of tactics, and he's kind of using the authority of his office, I think he's claiming he has the sanction of the board in doing this, or he didn't even claim that, but he's... Well, you'll hear what he did. You can make your own decision. This is actually posted at a story on Indie Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and it is activists ask ACLU to help end sleeping ban. And here is some of the tape of what happened when I went in, and as I went into, there's a large gathering. Marimba band was kind of preparing to play. You'll hear it play. There were people with you know, taking donations, but not requiring donations, except where we were concerned, as it kind of turned out. And, yes, the other individual was not a homeless man. He was a 79-year-old activist who is concerned about the abuses in the mental health system. His name was John Telfair. And they turned him away once he'd been inside, saying he didn't have enough money, although you'll see the ultimate outcome was he did get in after extensive pressure on our part and assistance from an unexpected quarter. Here's the discussion that I was forced to have with a man blocking my path as I approached as I tried to enter the premises, the yard, and then into the large room where there were many chairs set up and refreshments and so forth, and three speakers were scheduled to speak, maybe even more than three.
It's 3 o'clock. We're out here at the Marine Lab at 100 Schaefer Road, where ACLU has a large sign on the building indicating some kind of a lecture event today. There's some orange ACLU signs. Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
What are the signs for?
We're going to show them to a few folks.
Well, can you do this outside instead of inside the event because it'll be disruptive?
We're not going to disrupt it.
You're not welcome to bring the signs inside. This is a private event.
Open to the public.
You're not allowed to bring signs into this event. We've organized this. We've rented this space. You may stand in the parking lot and hold your signs. You're welcome to come in without the signs.
Well, I mean, we're not going to necessarily disrupt anything.
You're not allowed to bring those signs into our event. We rented this space, and you're not welcome to bring them.
It's open to the public.
Robert, don't come in with those signs, or I'll have you arrested.
Is this the ACL? Well, it's your choice, Mike.
No, you're not coming inside with the signs, Robert. Go call 911, get someone with a cell phone, or have the police out here to deal with it.
Okay.
Meanwhile, you're not going in. Don't force me to physically restrain your arm.
The police are being called because Mr. Rotkin doesn't want these signs in here.
Free speech.
You're welcome to stand outside and hold them. We've rented this.
This is
area.
The American Civil Liberties Union. We can't walk in with some signs.
We need to confront.
Is this the American Civil Liberties Union?
Sleeping ban. It's been too long. It's been too long.
So what do we got,
Robert?
You know,
back outside.
We have a Santa Cruz
outside.
Mike. No.
Excuse me, Robert. Take your sign back outside.
Are you making a citizen's arrest?
I will if you step outside.
Why don't you do so?
Because
this event is open to the public. Now you can make a citizen's arrest of your own.
I'm going to make a citizen's arrest if you don't remove the sign outside.
We need some witness. From the ACLU who are concerned about civil liberties.
Rather play some music. Claim from outside with your signs.
No. This is a public event. We're entitled to come out.
You are not entitled to bring your signs here. We rented this space. It's a private event.
It's not a private event. It's open to the
public.
Open to the public.
Sorry. With your signs.
Now, there's no sign that you're not allowed to have signs. You can't do that, Mike.
Robert, take the sign outside.
Unless that you can show in court that this is disruptive, and you're being disruptive, you're blocking my path. Please move out of my way.
I am blocking your path.
Please move out of my way.
I'm not going to move out of your way, Robert.
Can I help you, sir?
Sure. I'm trying to come into the event and observe what's going on. It's open to the public, right?
Bring signs.
No, it's not.
It's open to the public, but not with signs, under the conditions in which we invite people. We don't invite them.
I'd like to see that in writing somewhere. Do you have that in writing? No, I don't think so.
I've called the police.
Is this the ACLU or what? Come on.
George, Barbara, I know you're trying to make a great event.
No, I'm trying to come in and observe what's going on.
No, you're
not disrupting anything.
That's disruptive.
Carrying a sign is disruptive.
Can you leave your sign out there? Can he come in?
Absolutely. I told him.
Sir, can you leave your sign right there?
I don't. If this is the ACLU, I don't see why I should leave a sign behind. The ACLU supports the right to have signs in public places. I'm sorry.
We've rented a space here. This is our event. It's not a public space.
Hey. Well, we must disagree.
For me?
Police are being called by the ACLU to stop signs from being shown.
No, you can show them right there in front.
No, you're not allowing us into the meeting. And we aren't being disruptive. We're just trying to walk in and sit down. That's all.
The public is invited to join our event, not your event.
We are joining your event.
No, not those.
We haven't disrupted anything. If we disrupt something, you can ask us to leave. We have disrupted nothing.
You carry your signs outside, Robert.
No. Mike, you're being dictatorial, and this is not the city council.
We'll have the police deal with it when they get here. Let's do it in an orderly fashion. I will have you arrested. You can take me to court if I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, I guess. You'll be in court, and I'll be in court again. ACLU is having me arrested, folks. Well, I better demonstrate this sign while I'm here.
Outside, Robert. You're not open. You're open up in here. You can stand 5 feet.
You could always try to destroy my sign, Mike, like you did in 1996 when you seized signs at City Hall. You may remember that.
No.
You don't. You've got to get convenient memory, Mike. No, this is a public event, Mike. You cannot privatize a public event once you've announced it. So you're blocking my way. I would like to move forward, you know, or if you want to... Ridiculous. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, are you supporting Mr. Rotkin's approach here of not letting me walk into your meeting?
He seems to be quite reasonable so far.
He's welcome to come in. He's not welcome to bring his signs inside. You can post them against the fence. You can hold them outside, whatever you like, you know. This is our event. This is not a public event.
I have not. No. You can't select the flyers that people have, the signs that they bring in. It's open to the public. It's open to the public. The ACLU should know this.
There's actually.
I don't know what's wrong with you guys.
Point, Robert.
Give me the case,
please. People try to disrupt those.
Oh, we're not trying to disrupt anything. You're disrupting my right to walk into a public meeting, Mike.
No, I'm not.
As are your friends here. And it's really sad that the ACLU is doing this. I don't understand why. Ms. Brodsky, why is the ACLU not letting me into this meeting?
He's been been invited in, but not with his signs. He can leave them outside.
You don't allow signs in a public meeting?
No, this is not a public meeting in that sense. This is a private meeting. It's a membership drive.
It's open to the public.
And people pay to get in here.
No, it's free to the public. I asked your member, your fundraiser beforehand. It was online. She said, yes, it is.
Essentially, it is to raise money for ACLU, and everybody who has entered has given $25 and more.
It's not required. That was my understanding. Otherwise, it wouldn't come out.
Well, and then I think you got...
Well, you gave misinformation to Jenny Heath, who was giving out information about this.
Well,
and it also said open to the public.
That was inappropriate. I'm sorry. But it's that kind of an event.
It's been announced as open to the public.
Well, we can go back and forth. It seems to me, I think you would understand that this is a membership fundraiser.
Why are you so disturbed about having people sitting inside your meeting with different views?
I'm concerned that you don't sit inside a meeting.
Oh, you are.
That you are going to be disruptive as it has happened.
There's no give me one instance of when I've been disruptive in the past in one of your meetings.
Listen, I'm not going to stand and
no,
have a conversation.
No, that's slander, you know. No.
Essentially.
It's not going to persuade me of anything.
It might. You never can tell, Mike. I'm always open to reasonable arguments.
I'm sort of asking you because we have worked so hard to do this. Months of preparation.
You're not the only one who's worked hard on issues, and we're here to, you know, to be here as well. So
I understand that. And
well, stop blocking my way so I can go into this meeting and sit down and relax.
What are you going to do, push me over?
What? No.
I mean,
why are you blocking my way? You're blocking no one else's way. You're blocking my way. And you're letting this guy, who, you know, has a habit of doing this at city council meetings, to disrupt the right of the public to come in and to a public meeting.
I have never blocked you from coming to a city council meeting, Robert. That's an absolute lie.
You blocked the right of the public to make comment at various times. You've had people arrested.
Oh, now we're changing the subject.
No,
I think... blocking your way.
You're on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, Mike.
You stick in the time limits that you're afforded. That's the only thing you ever...
No, you constricted time limits at city council, but also...
So now we didn't stop you from speaking, we just told you had a...
You're blocking me from entering a public meeting. Right now, you are standing in front of me. In fact, I think I'll take a picture of you.
And that was, unfortunately, where the tape ended, although the incident didn't end there. Police came, quite a collection of police, two UCSC police officers... from whom I expected the worst, and then later three officers from the Santa Cruz Police Department, including an officer, a sergeant, and a lieutenant. And what happened? Well, the strangest thing happened. The officer was pretty courteous to the ACLU members, rather harsh to me, but he demanded that I state my intentions as to whether I intended to disrupt the meeting, and I said no. Never did. And he said, you better direct all your people not to do that. You can bring those signs in as long as you don't disrupt the meeting. And I said, well, that's all we ever wanted in the first place. And, of course, I suggested to people that that's what the police officer wanted. And everybody thought that would be a good idea. But, you know, I mean, that's fine. Nobody had any other notions. We were in an attempt to persuade American Civil Liberties Union members to assist in the lawsuit that the ACLU has successfully pursued in Southern California, but refuses to pursue here. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio, or you were. Try again, caller. 831-427-3772. 427-3772. And what you just listened to was a tape of part of a confrontation with Mike Rotkin on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, four-time mayor of Santa Cruz, and again, one of the mucky mucks who was part of the sort of the showcase celebrity lineup at the ACLU to get money for the ACLU, but apparently not on any local civil liberties issues, but on sort of broader national issues, which I probably would agree with the ACLU on, but it's really hard. I actually got a button from the ACLU, and I'm now wearing a no ACLU or ACLU no thanks button on my shirt, because the ACLU's not only apparently has no interest in homeless people and doesn't give a damn about what goes on with them locally, in terms of, you know, the nightly abuses they're subject to. But they are also incredibly and unbelievably repressive about, or cliquish perhaps, maybe that's what it is. I mean, it's hard to say, about their own meetings. That the idea that they would not allow people to walk into their own meetings peacefully and quietly, carrying a display device that, you know, maybe expressed a critical view, in a meeting that was declared open to the public is really something I would not have believed had I not seen it myself. I would have said, well, I don't like the ACLU, but I don't think they'd pull that. But, of course, it wasn't the ACLU that pulled it. It was Mike Rotkin. Rotkin was the man who stepped forward to do it. Other ACLU members would have, I think, ignored the whole thing. But once he did, they all fell in line. And that's another depressing thing about this. The encouraging thing was, of course, was that we got in, we talked to people, we circulated petitions and flyers, somewhat, although we were a little intimidated. The police insisted on staying through the whole meeting and watching us with an eagle eye and growling at us when we talked to them. That's fine. You know, police officers will take whatever manner they choose. But, you know, we had, you know, we were, they didn't interfere with our behavior other than their kind of hostile attitude. And most ACLU members we talked to were quite amiable, if not friendly, and took our flyers and chatted with us. I don't know that we got any donations ourselves for the lawsuit or that we signed up any volunteers. But we certainly made clear the local hypocrisy of the ACLU, which you can say, well, that's a victory. It exposes the truth of the situation. But it's also kind of depressing because it indicates the caliber. Maybe it's really important that we do indicate it. I guess it is. Of what's going on at the ACLU, that one individual, Rotkin, gets other people to fall in line behind him, eliminating the civil liberties of dissidents who arrive even before any kind of disruption has happened. I mean, I'm sure ACLU lawyers have argued in cases around the country, you can't exclude someone from a meeting because you think they might be disruptive, unless they start disrupting. I mean, you can't do that. And the idea that Rotkin will single-handedly do that and everybody else suddenly support him because he's Rotkin, he's on the board of directors, makes one lose a lot of confidence in the local ACLU and the local ACLU members. Not that I had a lot of confidence to begin with, because I've seen how they've ducked the homeless civil rights issue year after year, in fact, decade after decade. But I also know that on occasion some members of the ACLU have stepped forward. Kate Wells, who's a I guess she's a member of the ACLU, and she is the person, one of the lead lawyers in this lawsuit, was surprised to learn about this and kind of very surprised. But she also said that she was interested that she had not been invited to this meeting, even though it was a fundraising drive, even though there were awards being given out, even though it was relatively largest ACLU meeting I'd seen in quite a while. It was like 100 or more people, a hall larger than the Loudoun Nelson Community Center hall that's usually used for those meetings, the room number 3 at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. So the victory was the strange situation where the police, in this instance, were our allies. And I say that because I'm trying to figure out why that happened. Well, partially it was probably because the police, maybe they don't like the ACLU. And they thought, maybe this is comeuppance for them. Or maybe they just thought, wait a minute, this is a public meeting. If it's a public meeting and people want to come into it, and they're carrying signs or literature, that's their right. Something that maybe, you know, the police are accused by the ACLU, and frequently justly accused, of somehow not respecting, because they're given orders by their superiors. But here, they don't take orders from Mike Rotkin. And so when Mike was trying to exclude us, they didn't take orders. Now, Mike could have still made a citizen's arrest. He could have filled out a citation to make a citizen's arrest. It would have been a false arrest, in my view. There would have been no probable cause. And therefore, Rotkin would have been guilty of making a false police report. He actually was guilty in that he made a 911 call, made a police report that there was a disruptive activity happening at an ACLU meeting. When there was disruptive activity, he was stopping a member of the public from entering without justification. I hadn't killed anybody. He wasn't holding me in custody for the police. He just decided he was afraid at some point I might be disruptive. Mike has a rather uncertain understanding of the Constitution and basic rights, and that's what makes it so frightening that he's in a position of power both in the ACLU and at City Hall as a city council member and as a mayor. And as he's not a mayor now, but I often call him the shadow mayor because Emily Riley, who's our current mayor, looks to him for the decisions. We have a caller. You are on Free Radio. Welcome. Where you were on Free Radio, anyway. If you want to catch me off air, you can leave me a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll kind of get back to you later, or you can wait till I put on a tape and I can talk to you during the tape if that's what you need. Again, the number to call in is 427-3772. We're talking about the exclusion of activists trying to go to the ACLU meeting last Sunday out there on Schaefer Road, the fundraiser that was open to the public that we eventually did get into, but only because the police, we stood up to the threats of Mike Rotkin, well, the action of Mike Rotkin in falsely calling the police and then letting us come in anyway. Well, he didn't let us come in. He stopped his complaint to the police. He didn't make his citizen's arrest. Now, I talked to him about this later on the telephone. He had a little conversation with me, and I said, you know, would you like to come on the radio and explain this? We can debate it. We can discuss it. You can let the community know how you're acting in your function as an ACLU board member by excluding a person with signs walking into your meeting who you have a suspicion might be disruptive. And how that is that how an ordinary individual should sort of, does this follow from ACLU principles? Is it a shocking and daring new principle that you're articulating? I mean, what is going on here? And I didn't put it quite this way, but I invited him on the air. And Mike has never really declined an invitation to come on the air, but he declined this one. He said he didn't want to come on the air because it wasn't a public policy matter, you see. But I think it was a public policy matter because I think that the way a council member behaves in this way reflects upon what he does on the city council. Now, he didn't say, I, Mike Rotkin, the mayor, or I, Mike Rotkin, a city council member, am excluding you. He didn't even say, I, Mike Rotkin, board of directors member. He just said, I, Mike Rotkin, am doing this. But an individual makes a false police report, which is a crime, by the way, to make a false police report, should be understood as behaving in a way you might want to think about whether you're going to trust that individual to act in a constitutional manner, protect the constitutional rights of other people in a future situation that's similar, whether it's at city council or elsewhere. And in a way, I was trying to give Mike an opportunity to defend his own reputation. Now, since there's no big spreads in the Sentinel, in fact, it's been completely ignored, both online and off, although it has garnered 31 messages or comments on the IndieBay.org, the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, maybe Mike doesn't care about it. I suspect that's the case. What do you think? Any comments on this? Any reactions? Anybody out there listening? Let me know. 427-3772. Or, of course, you can leave your comments online if you want to go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. In the studio with me, I have a walk-in guest who has apparently gotten past Mike Rotkin. I asked him to kind of stand outside and make sure that you... I guess you didn't bring any signs with you, so that's good. What's your name there, woman?
My name is Linda.
Linda, yes.
And I didn't see Mike out there or any other blocking pleasures.
No, it's unfortunate. You know, I mean, the security has gotten very lax here at the Free Radio. Anyway, those are the couple of things that happened in the last week. Not terribly, you know, in a way, they were rather minor. I would have rather preferred to see a continued sleep out at City Hall, or, you know, increased action by campers. Another incident that happened recently, for those who are interested, is that Donna Dice has been reporting in, and she may be calling in. She's an activist who lives in her RV. She is reporting that Ranger John Wallace has now posted areas of parking lots out at Lighthouse Field, parking lot A, I think it's called. Donna tells me that her RV is no longer allowed out there, nor are other RVs during the day. Lots apparently are closed at night, so it's not really the issue there, but the day. And in order to understand how this happened and who closed these lots, I put in a Public Records Act request today to John Wallace's boss, Steve Hammack, who's the superintendent of Parks and Rec, and whose boss is also Dennett Shoemaker, who I call the Parks and Rec Czarina. The original Czarina, of course, was, well, we won't get into the original Czarina. Are you a Czarina? It's a nice outfit you have on there, Linda.
Thank you. I wear this for my grandson because he likes the glittery beads. But I like it, too.
Uh-huh.
And my physical therapist is teaching me at 58 years old how to breathe. She liked it, too. She said it looks like a sunset.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of mellow colors, green and orange and yellow, sort of the sunset colors.
Amber.
Well, have you been listening to the last half hour of the show on the radio? Or
not the whole last half hour. I heard the end of your tape and then your epilogue.
Oh, my, yes, my my endless
The Robert
commentary.
Versus Mike.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, in a way, it's sort of it's a victory, and it's a strange victory. It's also an indication of I'm kind of sad that, first of all, even Rotkin, maybe he's just too clever to file a complaint against me where he has to go to court, a complaint either for trespass or for disrupting a meeting, because either of those things, there's no probable cause for any of that. And so, because had there been probable cause, the police would have found me guilty just standing there with those signs, because I hadn't left the property. I was standing right where Rotkin challenged me, which was on the property that he's, I'm sure, accurately stated they had leased for this public event.
I heard you saying on the air, Robert, that you did this records request.
Right. This is a records request, not about, actually, probably a records request about the what's called the incident recall, which is a 911 tape you get. When you call in the police department, they keep a record of a person who complains, and you are allowed to get a copy of the record of that tape, the discussion between the dispatcher and the person making the complaint, and then the dispatcher and the officers being dispatched, and what goes back and forth on the radio between them. That would tell the tale about the nature of the complaint Mike Rotkin made. But the actual public record I requested was not about that incident. It was about the incident that happened where John Wallace, and that was, I wasn't looking for the, he didn't make a, he gave a citation, so he also made an arrest in that sense. Citations are arrests, they're non-custodial arrests, but they are arrests. You're not free to go, and they're writing out a citation. Wallace apparently just wants to get rid of if Donna Dice's report is correct, the RVs, her RV particularly that she lives in, out at Lot A. Apparently, you know, these are poor people live in vehicles, and during the day they park in certain places, and I guess Wallace feels that he's doing the city a service by eliminating them. And my Public Records Act request concerned the issue of what document was issued that ordered the closing of parking lot A. What was the rationale? What kind of discussion, if any written discussion or communications, preceded it, and so forth? So,
I thought I read about that in the paper, in the second shrinking and restriping of that lot, which happened two times in the past couple years, they've tried to tighten that parking lot down and done everything within the city's interpretation of legitimate to make it less friendly to locals and poorer travelers and more friendly to tourists and people with gold plastic, I guess. And I remember when it started, it seemed like it was pitched, and this is from talking to street people as well as city clerk types, it was pitched as the surfers versus the locals. But the minute such a conflict hit the city, they were out there within 3 days rebuilding the whole parking lot. So it must be something they've been hoping to do for a long time, from what I've gathered.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of money that's gone into Parks and Rec for increased enforcement, not for facilities that might, you know, actually assist people, but for increased enforcement. And $750,000 was given to Parks and Rec this year, an additional $750,000, and I guess $250,000 of that was for increasing by a factor of seven the rangers and police that are helping Wallace to drive poor and homeless people out of the Poganip. Well, you might put it, he would put it differently, I'm sure, in other words, too.
Yeah, like scare the bejeevies out of anyone that's reduced to being a pedestrian with no place to sleep.
Well, it's more like, you know, he would say they're, you know, he's trying to protect the environment of the Poganip and stop the despoiling of with nasty campsites. And here I'd like to say, with a tip of the hat to Pat Kittle and, who knows, maybe Bob LaMonica, who are occasional listeners of the show and occasional critics, I would urge all campers to camp responsibly if you can. You know, camp lightly on the land. Try to pack out your trash. If you're going to take a dump, do so in a fashion where it's buried. And, you know, show some respect for the environment. Having said that, I'm more concerned that people's basic human right to be able to sleep somewhere at night is being regularly and systematically violated, and people are being essentially driven out of the area as part of a gentrification scheme that treats human beings as ciphers, even people who've lived here for quite some time.
Ciphers?
Zeros.
Oh, less than ciphers.
Oh, cipher is a zero, yes.
I see. I would add to that. I think the kind of coaching you and others have done, like Cop Watch, it's important to tip people off. Young people end up wandering all over the country, and they don't know where they can even sit down, let alone take care of themselves these days. To bear in mind and remember, if you woke up suddenly by one, that these park rangers are just like policemen when it comes to things like tickets, and you want to be self-conscious and circumspect, even if you just woke up, how you respond to them, and keep your own needs in mind, or they'll take advantage of you. You'll be in jail, for example. If you just act naturally, you could end up in jail.
Well, whenever you deal with a police officer, you know, the advice you'll be getting if you go to this Know Your Rights forum on Saturday, which I recommend people go to, this is going to be held at the River Levee near the River Street Shopping Monstrosity. For those of you who know where that is, that's where the River Street sign is, Highway 1 and Highway 9.
Also known as the Box Mall, the river near the Box Mall.
It's the Gateway Mall, I guess they call it. The Gateway Center. Free School sent me this email, or actually I think I picked it up offline or online at the Indy Bay, again, Santa Cruz Indy Media. War in Santa Cruz, Know Your Rights, Saturday, September 1st, 1 p.m., against the homeless. In our ongoing fight to fight the downtown police state, Free School Santa Cruz teachers will be helping to abolish the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. On Sunday, although it says Saturday, September 1st,
oh, no, the thing
so it's
you
a little confusing here.
On the email said Sunday.
No, my...
The Huff, sir, listserv?
No, well, Huff's meeting is on Sunday at 2. The Free School is meeting on Saturday, on September 1st.
Saturday.
Yeah.
To go.
Although, actually, let's see, today is Thursday the 30th, Friday the 31st, September 1st, Saturday. But this actual email that they sent out is a little confused. They're talking about... On Sunday, we're offering a Know Your Rights workshop. Ah, I see what this is. They did offer a Know Your Rights workshop a couple Sundays ago in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. They didn't change their wording. They're a little bit behind the times. What they mean is they'll be offering a Know Your Rights workshop Saturday, September 1st, 1 to 3 p.m., River Levee, near the River Street Shopping Center. So I think what that means is you go to the shopping center, the Gateway Shopping Center, and then you walk up to the levee. And you have to go up to the path that runs right along the river. And I think they're going to be holding their seminar there. And it's very, I hope you go to it, those of you who are listening and those of you who haven't been to one, because it's amusing, it's interesting, it's audience involving. I think you've seen it, Linda. It has Jason and Rico, two consummate actors, dressed up in police uniforms, harassing people, and they telling you at the same time how to deal with that kind of harassment. So they have about four code sentences, one of which is, am I free to go, whenever a police officer approaches you about anything whatsoever, and then that you should go. You should walk away. A police officer says, well, yeah, but I want to talk to you about something. And you say, and just leave, you know. Unless they say no, you're free to go. Or they indicate, you know, that you're not free to go because they hold on to you or there's something to that effect. Then if they start talking to you, your response, according to these Know Your Rights folks, should be, I have nothing to say. I do not consent to a search. I want to speak to a lawyer. Period. And you keep repeating these three things again and again and again. And now, when I was younger, they used to tell you, yes, am I under arrest? What are the charges? But since that, they have what they call Terry stops or detentions, which mean that they can hold you without arresting you for a limited period of time. And when they do that, they can interrogate you, but they can't search you. They can only pat you down for weapons. After they've arrested you, they can't interrogate you without warning you of your Miranda rights, which is to say your right to say nothing, your right to be taken to your right to be have a lawyer present. That anything you say may be held against you. Some people think that unless you're advised of these rights when you're arrested, that you're somehow not being treated appropriately. That may well be true. But the courts have ruled that unless an officer tries to interrogate you, they don't have to inform you of these things. In other words, if they want to interrogate you, they have to say you have a right to be taken to a lawyer. You have to write to a lawyer present. You don't have to say anything. Anything you say may be held against you. But if they don't, if they're just arresting you and taking you in, then they make casual conversation with you, which they can use as evidence in court, by the way, so watch out. You can challenge it by saying, I was never warned of my rights, but, of course, it's your word against theirs.
And plus they have the info.
But the point I'm making is that in the old days, saying, am I under arrest, what's the charge, might not be sufficient because they can either put you under arrest or they can put you under detention. So the way to deal with that, according to Rico and Jason and their Know Your Rights seminar coming up this Saturday, 1 to 3 on the levee right next to the Gateway Shopping Center, is you just say, if you're not free to go, you say, I have nothing to say, I want to speak to a lawyer, I don't consent to any searches.
But you have to say your name, don't you?
No, you don't have to say your name. However, if you... they will probably arrest you if you don't, and they'll take you into custody in order to determine who you are. Usually, it's okay to say your name and your address if you want, but if they're going to make a field cite and release you, they're going to write you out a citation. Then, unless you give them the information they request to write out the citation, which really fundamentally is your name and address, and then sign the promise to appear, they won't cite and release you. They'll take you to jail, and the jail will then decide what to do.
You're saying once it starts to be an arrest, if you don't give them that when they ask, they'll probably take you to jail?
Well, they will, because they don't know who you are, and they can't write you out a citation and get a promise to appear. So they'll take you to jail, and the jail will either hold you, or they'll get you to, they'll get you to sign something promising to come to court, or they'll just release you because they're sick of you, because they do that often, for example, people who are drunk or people they want to get rid of or people who are holding hunger strikes in the jail like Brian Staley did back in 1989 around the sleeping ban. Backyard Brian, we used to call him. Anyway, so this is coming up on Saturday. I invite people to go check it out. Again, 1 o'clock. 1 to 3, River Levee, near the River Street Shopping Monstrosity, as it's so described by Rico and Jason. So there's also going to be another event coming up on the same Saturday. If you've seen the Know Your Rights Forum before and you want to come to the Human Rights Organization meeting, that's going to be happening at the Firefly Cafe, and that's going to be happening on Front Street at 131 Front Street. That happens every Saturday.
So I guess, Robert, you'd say... people who want to know more about the anti-camping ban, sleeping ban lawsuit might go to the Firefly Cafe.
Right, or you can go to one and then leave early and go to the Firefly Cafe because it starts at two. The first one starts at one, but you won't be able to see the whole thing. And I'm hoping that we can do our own seminar. I'm still trying to get the information from the police department about some of the provisions that they use. We actually began that whole process. Jason and Rico did do this Know Your Rights seminar the night of the sleepout, the night that the sleepout began at City Hall. I think you were there, Linda, for the speaker's part of the sleepout at City Hall on August 12th.
Most of the night. I went home about 11:30.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that Rico and Jason did this in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is where we'll be back again, 2 o'clock on Sunday, the next day, again, encouraging people to have a little chat with Vice Mayor Coonerty. And ask him why Vice Mayor Coonerty's response to a request as to what's going on with the city's policy around the sleeping ban should be, we're going to ban Becky Johnson and Bernard Klitzner from the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Well, they join a distinguished list of former bannees by the father of the vice mayor.
Now, wait a minute. Have you yourself been banned from the Bookshop
Santa
Cruz?
Well, I was told to leave, yeah, but it's got the only decent bathroom downtown and the best bookstore. And if you hear him also saying... out of the other half of his mouth, don't go shopping at Borders. What, are you going to give up Bookshop Santa? I didn't really do. I came back.
So you've been violating the trespass admonition given you by the Coonerties. I hope that Ryan and Neil will take you in hand.
I hope they're not listening to your show right
now.
Give
you a firm lesson, Linda Lemaster.
No, I didn't violate anything. I never got anything in writing. They didn't threaten to boycott me. Neil Coonerty told me, I don't want you to ever come in my store again. And I thought that was a personal preference there, so,
I see. So you're going to interpret...
I tried not
you're
to bump into him again.
I see. You're going to interpret it as a don't trespass in my store as I really wish you wouldn't trespass.
Well, if he had said
store.
Point blank, do not, I might have had a moral issue there, but, you know...
I see.
I spend time downtown. I need to know where the good bathrooms are.
Yes.
I mean, well, plus all the reasons he said he didn't want me in his store were baloney.
Yeah, I mean, that's something, again, as I said, the events coming up in the near future, this Know Your Rights thing, Saturday 1 to 3 on the levee, this on Sunday, Bookshop Santa Cruz, come on down there if you want to be a part of the kind of a get-together of folks around the sleeping ban lawsuit. And also on Saturday, actually more technically to deal with the sleeping ban lawsuit, volunteers are kind of apportioning tasks at the human rights organization, at the Firefly, at 131 Front Street, 2 o'clock on Saturday. So you got a number of options this weekend. You can always, of course, come to the Huff meeting. Huff's going to be tabling also at the Farmers Market next Wednesday. So, you know, think of the exciting prospects in store for you.
How many volunteers does it take to do the Farmers Market tabling, Robert?
Well, it's... How many Huff volunteers does it take to end the sleeping ban? An infinite number, and we still haven't ended it yet, is the answer, I guess. But, you know, as many as want to come down, you know. I think we have a couple volunteering to do it already, and people can extend the time or, you know, lay out gaily colored sleeping bags, strum their guitars. Farmers Market has been pretty liberal of late, although Food Not Bombs doesn't seem to be feeding next to it. I know they've... There's a lot of drumming going on, but not much feeding. I guess a little food does appear, but Food Not Bombs is kind of at a low ebb. And so it's kind of sad to see that.
So they probably need fresh blood and new volunteers and donations of gallons of olive oil, too.
I'm not quite sure how to reach Food Not Bombs. I think they used to get together at the, not the Zombie Collective, the other collective. His name does not come to mind right now, but it's on the tip of my tongue. But I don't even know that they're doing that, since they're not serving food at the farmer's market.
But they are somewhere downtown, aren't they? Like at the clock or something?
No, that's Reverend Pastor Adams does serve food there on Sundays. I think Food Not Bombs may serve, but that's a good question. If anybody has information on this, please call in, 427-3772. Let's take a brief musical break. We'll be back with my patient guest here, who's...
I'm patient.
Maybe you're going to give it. I mean, I know that I'm often glad to have you in the studio, Linda, because you have so much experience on fighting the sleeping ban. You've been doing this for 20 years or more, actually longer than I have.
Yeah, 30 years or more. I mean, if you think of Scott's Creek being the launch pad.
Yeah, the Scott's Creek Bluff trial, the longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history concerning people who were
fighting homelessness before it even existed.
Driven out of Santa Cruz in 1977, the year the sleeping ban... Actually, the next year was implemented. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Linda and Robert.
Yes, Robert, this is Mike from Food Not Bombs.
You were asking
about why there was little food yesterday or why F&B is at a low point.
Well, if it
where
is.
Where to find you when you're serving?
You will find us at very closely to 4 o'clock. In fact, we showed up a little early yesterday. We had some pretty hardworking volunteers. And you showed up a little late. I saw you roughly around 5, so that's probably why you didn't see any food there. But no, we are still strong, and we're still serving.
You have kitchens?
We're cooking at the Cesar Chavez Co-op, if you're
that's really good
wondering
one.
What co-op we serve at. Roughly around 12 o'clock, we usually gather, and we go from there.
And do you want people who are volunteers to show up at that at co-op at noon, or do you
want to
screen
them? We want
people
to show up at noon for cooking. People wanted to come or just had the time to just do serving, I recommend coming to the farmer's market at around 4.
So noon Wednesday, and can you tell us the address of the Cesar Chavez
co-op? I don't know it by heart. It's the Cesar Chavez co-op. It's up on Beach Hill on Main Street.
Beach Hill and Main Street. And
yes.
Maybe do you have access to Indie Media?
Yes, I do.
Maybe you could post that on Indie Media as a little story so people can, you know, have more access to that.
Okay.
Also,
that's
how
great.
Many times a week are you serving, Mike?
This is a once-a-week thing, every Wednesday, for the moment.
Okay, and I want you to serve every other day, twice on Sundays, if you can.
And you're going to cook 4 times a day?
No, I'm going to eat 4 times a day.
No.
Anyway, that sounds great. Thank you, Mike.
You're very welcome, Robert.
All right, is there a number people can call,
can I ask
by the
a
way?
Question?
No, you can't.
Please.
Actually, you can, of course.
Mike,
but
before you
do, though, is there a number, Mike, people can call, or is there?
No, there's not. It's pretty much just...
show up. Huh?
Show up, yes, correct.
And show up at Beach Hill, and you're going to be posting more specifics now to get there? And so
yeah, that's very possible.
How about online? Is there any kind of email address?
No, unfortunately, the email, there is a F&B Santa Cruz website, except it's very outdated, and the information is wrong, unfortunately.
Okay.
And the only one who has access to that is the one who posted it, in which... is very long gone of whoever has the
probably
access.
Either Robert Flory or Tony Mello.
That's pretty long
the
gone.
Old days.
Something in that area.
Yeah, well, okay, Mike, if you can. And
oh, I'll post something on Indie Media for your convenience.
And also, if you're up for it, leave me a message at 423-HUFF how you can be reached through a private channel.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Linda has a question for you if you got
it.
Sure.
I was thinking, since people actually listen to Robert's show, what are the two things you need most? Because there's people that have things but don't have time.
Mm-hmm. Donations are always extremely welcomed. Spices, oil, any kind of donations, food donations from any source, mostly fruits and vegetables.
Great, thank you.
We are always in need of volunteers and people with cooking experience, or even any people just come and just want to help and help serve people.
That's great. I'm really glad it's kept going one way or another here.
For sure. But that's where you can find us every Wednesday. 12 noon at Cesar Chavez Co-op, and 4 o'clock we serve at the Farmer's Market. So.
All right.
Sehr gut. Thank you, Mike.
All right, man. You're very welcome.
Yeah,
all righty.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Got your big opportunity to chat with the city-famous Linda LeMaster, former city council candidate and head of the Homeless Issues Task Force from 1999. Task Force, as they called themselves, or FARCE, as I called them. Good report online if you want to check out the Task Force's report. They actually did some very good work in terms of ideas, although they defused a lot of activism, and that was the sad thing.
That's your point of view.
That was my point of view that year. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Linda and Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Andrea.
Hey, Andrea. Long time no hear.
Yeah, I just want to put the word out there to everybody that if they haven't seen that movie Sicko by Michael Moore, that they should see it, because you know what? That shit is going on right here in Santa Cruz, because I wound up having to get taken away in an ambulance early this morning, and I got hauled off to Dominican Hospital, and I wasn't even, physically well enough to be released, and the security guard came with a hospital worker, and they told me that if I didn't get up and get myself in the wheelchair, that they're going to call the sheriff's department on me. And I didn't even have any shoes on. All I had was my jacket and my cane. And these fuckers got me in a wheelchair, rolled me out to fucking SoCal Avenue, and dumped me off at the bus stop. So, it's fucked, Robert.
It sounds... that's pretty fucked to me, Andrea. Now, first of all, I want to commend you for being... having the wherewithal to call in and let us know about it. And that's an important part of all this. And for folks out there who are listening, if anything like this is happening to you or anybody you know, you need to let people know about it. It's the only way that it's going to stop. What was the nature of the emergency that you were in the hospital for?
I just haven't been able to. I've been kind of stuck on the bed for 3 days, unable to move or do anything. And I told him that. I said, I can't even, comb my hair or brush my teeth, And, I'm dragging myself to the toilet and back, and I can't do anything. And the doctor gave me a little, 6-milligram shot of morphine. That's the only reason why I have a little bit of energy to call now. And, then the other late nurse lady, whatever, came back and said, not only did he discharge me, but the security guard and the other guy said, I said, where are you taking me? Why can't you just wheel me out to the front emergency room so I can make a phone call, And he says, oh, no, the doctor wants you off of the premises.
What doctor?
Dr. Whaley.
How do you spell it?
I think W-H-A-L-E-Y, Dr. Whaley. I don't know. So the doctor wants you off the premises, and that's why they said he wants us to wheel you off the property to the property line, which was the bus stop on SoCal Avenue. And the one hospital worker was nice enough to let me use his cell phone to call a friend of mine to come and pick me up. But when they were first wheeling me down the hill, the guy's sitting there going, oh, there's a payphone across the street. I'm like, how do you expect me to crawl across SoCal Avenue with a cane to a payphone, I'm just pissed, man. All those people are just cold and cruel, and they have no compassion for people with pain. And if I fall through the cracks and die,
this next week. I want you to fucking do something about it, Robert. I swear to God, it's just fucked, man.
Here you go.
And I'm just... I'm so tired of this shit, you know? I'm just tired of that. Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. Maybe you could get a letter to Michael Moore for me. Okay, bye.
We could certainly try to forward it if you can, you know, if you can get, if we can find a way for you to get it to us. Why don't you, you can make phone calls. You're okay with that?
I don't know, Robert, because I don't know how I'm going to be doing. You know,
yeah.
As soon as this morphine wears off a little later tonight.
So you're in intense pain. Is that the deal?
Yeah, pretty much. And he wouldn't even write me a prescription for any medication at all. So, and I'm not due to see my doctor until September 12th, and I don't know if I can survive that long. So I don't know.
Well, leave me a message, Andrea, with your number on it, and you know, I don't know. I mean, what you're doing is good. What you're doing is right for us. We're not. What we're doing isn't going to necessarily be right for you because you're not getting what you need. But
yeah,
you're putting the word out there. I mean, that's
because I heard that there's some sort of like a federal crackdown or something, and all the doctors are wigging out and getting paranoid. You know, because and so now they don't want to write for pain medication anymore, and they basically pulled the carpet out from under me. And look what's happening. Us patients are having to suffer. And probably some of us patients might fall through the cracks and die. You know?
Do you want to give out your number and have potentially listeners give you a call as to, you know, maybe you might get a volunteer or someone who wants to be more helpful and specifically based upon your account? I mean, people can believe it or not believe it as they wish. I tend to believe it, you know. But you might want to, that's a possibility. Or we can suggest... Maybe people can call in and talk to the show, and who knows? Maybe you can get some, eventually some volunteer help that way.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So let me know if you want to leave your number out. We'll put it out, or we can leave the you can use the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I will get in touch.
You know my number, right?
I think I do, and if I don't, leave it on the Huff line.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Okay, Andrea.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, babe. Phone lines are open, 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me, Linda LeMaster, who is a longtime Huffster, sometime Bag Ladies Revolt leader, and the occasional bureaucratic hanger-on for what's the latest thing you're doing?
Bureaucratic?
Consortium of carelessness. What do they call
it?
Ten years
of
nonsense from the Bush administration. What is it? The plan to end the homelessness, or at least to put poverty pimps at each other's throats as they scramble for the bucks. What is that?
If it's a plan to end homelessness, which is what HUD's wanting people to call it,
HUD,
it's like the county's health maintenance organization being a plan to uncover everyone. It's not going to end homelessness. It's going to define people out of being considered homeless so they don't get counted, just like the Department of Labor loses track of you if you've been unemployed long enough.
Yeah, there's a meeting. Well, these meetings happen every month or two, and you get to go out there and babble with the big bosses as they try to get a piece of the federal pie.
I have to assert any babble I get away with. It's not as much fun as talking with you.
Well...
But I do get away with it after many years, and the other people who have known homelessness that used to go have either died or given up.
If anybody has any, by the way, incidents to report about Dominican Hospital, or if anybody wants to help Andrea or learn more about her situation by reaching her directly, give me a call on the off-air, if you'd like, on the Huff line, or you can talk about it on-air. On-air number, 427-3772. Off-air number, 423-4833. 423-HUFF. I have an ordinance in front of me here, which I may have talked about before. It's a Fresno City Council ordinance. I called the Fresno City Council today because Fresno, you may know, is the site of a successful lawsuit, another federal lawsuit, called the Kincaid case. Pam Kincaid, who died under suspicious circumstances about a month ago, and who came to Santa Cruz 3 months ago with a group of activists from Fresno. And I met her again when she came actually last fall with Michael Rhodes to Santa Cruz, and then we went over, some of us went to the I think Becky Johnson and I went to the homelessness marathon, which was held in Fresno. Fresno and the Kincaid decision, the federal courts came down with the decision that you can't destroy homeless property, like John Wallace, for example, is directing his ranger cleanup crews to do regularly, without storing the property. You have to store the property for, like, I don't know, it was 30 to 60 days, and you can't destroy it. Now, apparently our city not only feels that the mayor can treat homeless people with contempt, not meet with them, the city attorney can ignore the Jones decision, the vice mayor can act like he's okay, you know, the proper response to concerns about unconstitutional behavior by the police is to ban people from his bookstore. But what we also here have is that the Parks and Rec Department has decided it doesn't have to follow the law either and can run around destroying property in the Poganim. This is what happens when you give the police too much power. They not only start exercising it hands-on in the day-to-day, but they also acquire a kind of latent power to set the political agenda and control it at City Hall. Am I being an alarmist, Linda LeMaster? You've had many a chat with former police chief Steve Belcher when you were head of the Homeless Icky Task Force, Homeless Issues Task Force.
Chatted with many officers on duty as well. I don't think what you said is an exaggeration. I think that the city's remiss and culpable for not providing the support that these officers in the field require and need and deserve, and they're forced to make policy decisions one by one in the lurch, and they're not even trained to do it. I mean, maybe nobody in the city is trained to do it from what I'm seeing on that point, but it's not fair to set the cops up like this where they have to make a judgment call, and their judgment isn't trained in policy. It's trained in arresting and containing and busting up
fights. I always
bikes.
Get a little nervous when I hear this. Great sympathy for the officers on the beat. I've got as much... I like the next officer who's, you know, yo, jovial, ho, 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 friendly as much as the next person. But real understanding is that this is a person with a badge, a gun, a terrorist organization behind her or him, whose main purpose is to intimidate you into doing what she or he wants, which usually has to do with what wealthy people want you to do in a circumstance, regardless of your basic human rights. So that's sort of where
I'm talking about.
That's where I start from.
They don't intimidate everyone equally, mutually, and the
I
same.
I don't care. I don't think
they intimidate based on their own personal prejudice or bias because they're not trained.
Well, if
and
they were
not
trained,
supported,
what
they don't
Linda,
have the administration.
Linda, if they
need.
Were trained, what difference would it make? They would be trained to better intimidate people according to the class laws that we live under. So to me, that makes very little difference. And I'm sorry, I don't think it's a matter of inadequate training, although today in a Public Records Act request to the Parks and Rec Department, I requested to know not only on what basis they were suddenly posting signs that RVs could not be in the parking lots out by the beach, you know, who made that decision suddenly and on the basis of what, because apparently these signs have suddenly appeared for the first time, according to Donna Dice, who lives out there or lives in her vehicle and occasionally parks it there. But also, what I'm getting lost in my own thoughts here. Luckily, however, I only have 10 minutes left in the show, so actually 11 minutes. So if you want to, if you I got any questions coming in, please make them. My point, I guess, is that the police department, I'd like to know what you learned from the police chief. Whether you felt that I was actually being appropriate in my criticism of the police department, but then you sort of said, well, gee, the officers aren't getting adequate training and
no,
direction.
No, I'm trying to say that they're being asked to do policy. They're carrying out and executing policies that haven't been set by this city or its people or taxpayers or even the federal government.
The sleeping ban was set
and
by the city council.
And if they're racist, that means they're
the
singling out...
The sleeping ban was set by the city council. It's been in place for 30 years.
But who do they use it against? People that don't have shiny, just washed RVs.
They have
no way to fix it when you accuse them of selective enforcement.
Selective enforcement is their middle name. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Makes my point.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Sam.
Hey, Sam.
I felt bad for that lady who called in earlier.
Good for you. I'm glad you did.
And I actually work at the Community Action Board Shelter Project.
Good for you.
And I just wanted to let people know that if you're homeless and coming out of the hospital and for some reason unfortunately. This does happen too often. You can give us a call. Our phone number is 457-1741, extension 190. And also the number for Homeless Persons Health Project is 454-2080.
This assumes that you, as they dump you on the sidewalk, they're going to let you use a cell phone. You can hobble across the street. I mean, what do you do, Sam, with this kind of a complaint? I mean, I saw these numbers on a little card that the police gave out at 3 in the morning. Useless numbers for as far as shelter goes. And I'm very cynical about it, though I have some regard for what the Shelter Project does in terms of Brindell's getting out, you know, a phone number options for people. I think that's great. And the very occasional voucher for people who are coming out of the hospitals. You know, I'm more impressed with you as a human being who's concerned about this and coming on it, frankly, as an ad for the Community Action Board. Because, frankly, the Community Action Board, I don't think, is going to do shit about this situation. But if I'm wrong, please, I would love to hear some action being taken. You want to bring this up at the next board meeting? You want to call Brindell and wake him up at home and tell him what the fuck is going on here? I mean, forgive me for putting it so you know, baldly, but... And let me ask Linda. Linda, am I being too harsh on this issue? All right.
Yes.
Linda
Sam
will be nicer.
Sam called in and he said, I want to help people that are homeless who get
right on, Sam. Thank you for calling.
Kicked out of the
stay
hospital.
On the line.
And he's in a position to do it. I don't know what, you know, facilities or resources he has to work with, but maybe he wanted to share that with people that need to hear it. So there.
That's my job, and I felt like I should let people
And can
know.
People call right now at 8 o'clock at night and get some assistance?
Unfortunately not. We're just open from 9 to 5.
Right.
And, you know, I agree that is a problem.
You know, if you want, Sam, and you want to actually kind of, you know, intersect with this person, I would be happy to put you in touch with her. And I'm not saying, you know, you'd have to make your own personal judgment about how much energy you want to put in, how credible you find her. But I'd be happy to pass that on to you. If you leave me a message at 423-4833, you leave me your number. I'll call you back and give you her number, and when I get back to a phone and after the show is over, which will be in about 8 minutes. So.
Okay.
And let me thank you, and also thank you for being willing to, you know, just to hang tough while I rage on about these issues. And it's not personal at all. So.
Oops, sorry.
That's okay. Anything else you want to say? Feel free to any other thoughts you may have.
No, I just wanted to get the word out and let you know that. It's a great show you're doing.
Oh, wow. Well, you're making it a good show. Thank you, Sam. Linda, anything else you want to say to Sam or ask him?
Well, I want to say something he inspired, that the shelter project that you're talking about, it does help people who need to get out of a hospital with a temporary place to live. Also, it helps people, and I never hear about this on free radio, who are about to be evicted. Now, these are programs that aren't like majorly funded by the federal government. These are programs that are funded by locals. So people need to know they exist so they can help them.
Do you any more for Sam specifically? Or?
No, but he might want to put a
Yeah,
phone
we
number.
Do.
Go ahead, Sam.
We also do eviction prevention, rental assistance for families with children, people with disabilities, or senior citizens.
Because I know we had a woman who called in last week, Tammy, who is about to be evicted from the Felker Street Apartments, and she's, you know, it's really hard to do eviction assistance considering, you know, the vacancy decontrol that's happened statewide,
right,
and the failure of the city council under Riley, Rotkin, Kennedy, this whole crew of people who will not pass even renter protection provisions, you know, just eviction protection.
Yeah.
We can't even get that here in Santa Cruz, but... Let me thank you. We've got about 6 minutes left. Somebody else may want to comment, but do get back to me.
Do you want to say your phone number or some good contact?
Yeah, it's if you want to apply for rental assistance, it's 457-1741, extension 152.
Thank you for your call.
Hey.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Sam, and thanks for listening in. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open. Last 5 minutes, 427-3772. Call in now or wait until Sunday or use the Huff line, 423-HUFF. If you've been hassled by police, if you have a problem, you have a reaction to something on the air you wanted me to pass on, if you want to be a volunteer to help end the sleeping ban one way or another, you can call the Huff line, 423-4833. Linda?
I'd like to repeat something I thought I heard you almost say before, too, and throw your phone number out for it. Other people who've been dumped from the hospital, they call it patient dumping, even if it was from a hospital to a lesser facility, it'd be good to get for us to know about 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 would be even better situations. We know it happens, but usually it happens to people who aren't, like that caller, able to respond immediately. And if we had a little more ammunition, some of us would go to the county and find out why they can't change the contracts they have with the only primary hospital.
Yeah, and also sometimes direct action gets the goods, too, where you get people who do direct protesting. I know that we spoke with Lori Ann Tennyson from Kalamazoo on Sunday, from the Kalamazoo Homelessness Action Network, how they were able to counter discrimination at fast food restaurants by showing up in great numbers on the sidewalk, picketing and embarrassing the restaurants into changing their policies. We've done the same thing in Santa Cruz here at Denny's 20 years ago, and they discriminated against Barbara Haglund and Linda Edwards, who are activists with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
They used to judge by how people look, whether you were homeless or not, and throw you out if they thought you were.
Used to. They still. And, in fact, what I've heard recently is that Denny's is doing the same thing again. So we may have to do another hit on Denny's. What we did with them was we went, 6 of us all ordered coffee, and they started to try to throw us out because we were sympathetic to a homeless person. Yeah, I know you were. So, you know, we're running up against the edge of the show. Uncle Dennis is going to be coming in with his creamy dregery, or a dregish creamery, creaming with the dregs, or dragging into the cream. It's a good show. If you like that kind of music, which I actually do, get into it. Also, you can learn about Earth First and environmental issues that I woefully neglect and shamefully neglect, but Dennis takes the front seat on and takes the lead on.
I like Uncle Dennis's show a lot.
He's a curmudgeon.
It's the only place you ever hear the Doors
is the wrong
anymore.
Color, and he wears the wrong kind of glasses. He's also a drunken slut who brings booze into the studio and is a control freak. But we're not going to get into that here at this time. Yes, what is that? He has Memorex.
CDRs.
A man is bringing. Can you eat CDRs? No.
Yes.
They provide medical care. What do you mean you can't? Let them eat CDRs.
Not very nutritious.
No. So I'm afraid that's about it for Bathrobe Spears Broadside. We're degenerating into idle banter back and forth. And thanks for being with me on this edition of. You're 2 minutes early, Dennis. So be nice. He's actually very nice. He's a sweetheart. He's a sweetheart.
Men treat men like men treat each other.
We're just doing our.
Now that was sexist on my part. You're letting me get away with
what?
It.
He's gonna go to. Ooh, let's see what I mean. That's that kind of comment.
All right.
Hey, listen, Linda. Thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I hope you came in more frequently. I think you used to have your own show at one point.
Well,
right?
Almost for a year. Loved it. I wish I could do it, but I can't do crowds.
We actually have someone who's arrived who may be able to make a 30-second announcement. Bernard, you have a 30-second announcement to make?
Well, quickly, we're about to
get close to the mic and make the announcement.
Yeah, you know, I really have to admit, if the police weren't there, I would have been very close to have been confronting those people in a very real way. It's very difficult to hold back about the ACLU. They, you know, in this area, you know, and I don't know their whole thing in Santa Cruz. I'm not going to condemn them. But when it comes to homeless people, they are not there. And I want to know why.
Yeah, Bernard is talking about the ACLU's Mike Rotkin's behavior at the ACLU, which some of the board members mimicked and nobody strenuously opposed. But frankly, I think all you did, Bernard, was you raised your voice at one point and expressed some anger. After that, you were quite, I didn't see you had any kind of particular problem.
But for him to raise his voice, Bernard's one of our little Gandhis.
Bernard is becoming more in the nature of Chavez than Gandhi these days. I don't know about Chavez. Chavez is a kind of a hack politician who happens to have a lot of oil money and a lefty kind of constituency. But we'll talk about that next show. Join us on Free Radio Santa Cruz. In the meantime, keep your eyes open and your mouth open as well, but not too far open because, you know, you got to be careful about those things. Be back on Sunday at 9:30, 423-4833, between times. Check us out. Thanks. Hey.
And yes, folks, the CD player has been screwing up all day. I'm not the only disc jockey to have encountered the problem of the skipping CD drive number 2, but apparently CD drive number 2 needs a little work, so we'll fix that. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's just a little bit after 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, and it's time for From the Cream to the Dregs, and let's try starting all over again with the Allman Brothers. Stay tuned. We'll have the Brew of the Week, News at 9, Environmental Earth First News at 9, and all kinds of music until 11 o'clock here on 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org.
You said no strings could secure you at the station. Platform ticket, restless diesel, goodbye.